Fence Unhinged, a breezy conversational float through the river of your day or night. You're about to hear a true story from writer and Guinness Book of World Records holder Eden Dawn about childhood clown phobias coming to life in an English countryside. Then comes the unhinged part. We'll deep dive into Eden's story and explore the unspoken, juicy, behind-the-scenes of it all. Hi, I'm Andrew.
Hi, I'm Frayn.
Frayn, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How about you, Andrew?
I'm good. How are you with clowns?
Ooh, no. No. In fact, I have a little tiny story, which is when I was living in Seattle, there was one of those velvet clown gallery things, and we drove by it. And people knew that I hated clowns so much that they started having this whole clown conversation. And it was giving me so much anxiety that I actually got out of the car and walked like 2 miles home from the car to make a point.
You're just like, no clown conversation in the
yeah.
car.
And it's a specific kind of clown. It's like a Barnum and Bailey clown. It's a velvet clown. It's not like the European clowning.
It's not a clown.
No, it's not a clown for me. What
it's
about
that
you?
It's 60s iconic clown. Yeah,
yeah. I particularly don't like clowns from the 1960s.
Yeah. I would say I'm okay with clowns, but I would also say I avoid them generally. I don't
right.
seek them out.
You don't seek them out.
Yeah.
What's it like to be okay with clowns, though? That I feel like you're. That's a little Switzerland.
I feel like it was harder in the 80s, but I feel like clowns aren't trending right now. At least not in my world. When was the last time you ran into a clown?
Well, I've seen some European clown shows. So that's the kind of clown I like.
Okay, so you seek those out.
I do seek that out. And when I say European clown, I sound very elite and mysterious. And maybe some people won't know what I'm talking about, but I hope you will delve in further to that
so
subject
that is
matter.
Our audience's research
yeah.
project
yeah.
for tomorrow.
Yeah.
But
today,
we have a really great guest.
We do have a great guest. We have released Eden Dawn, now fully oxygenated, from a sealed hyperchamber to join us now. Eden is the co-author of several city-focused book of dates. She also holds the record for the longest continuous drag show, which you can hear more about on her podcast, Slaying a Dragathon. And she's also right... square in the center of making a documentary about the experience. Welcome, Eden Dawn.
That's my hyperbaric chamber, like deep breath.
You look very well oxygenated right
now. It feels
now.
Like something I would do for beauty purposes. So.
Yeah, well, likewise. Mm-hmm. I think we can agree we'd both be on the Groupon for that. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have to ask, what was the, how many hours?
How many hours? Okay, so... we co-produced the longest drag show in history, which was 48 hours, 11 minutes, and 30 seconds of nonstop drag.
Insane.
It was insane.
Was there a previous record? Like
yes. So the previous record was Melbourne, Australia, at a measly 36 hours, 36 minutes.
It's just a day and a half.
I mean, I'm just kidding. It's the hardest thing in the world. And I feel bad in many ways for breaking their record because it should not have been done. It's so long. That's so much drag.
It's a lot.
That's a lot of drag. And I feel like this was probably like a very simple thing to produce. Like just an easy,
easiest thing. Everyone knows that drag queens are known for sticking to a schedule, for timing. Yes, we had so many drag queens, a bunch of queens from RuPaul's Drag Race. We had a bunch of celebrities and comedians and folks from SNL. And then we squished everyone into the tiniest, windowless backstage room with a Guinness judge watching us, where every single time someone switched on the stage, if we were 1 second over, we would lose. And
right.
we had 800 some stage changes without a single one being overtime.
It's insane. And tell us maybe what is like one of the weirdest rules for Guinness Book that people might not know about when you're putting on an event.
Well, one of the most complicated things was that no one could perform the no drag performer could duplicate a performance. So we had queens performing multiple shifts over that 48 hours, but you couldn't do the same song twice. So everyone had to come up with new numbers. But then you're also trying to put together a good show in my executive producer hat. So I might have three queens who want to do, you know, Britney Spears Toxic, and yet
of course
they can't all do it in the same shift because that's the audience. And I would say the other thing is the audience shifted every 2 hours, but Guinness requires there to be 25 butts in seats at all times or you lose. So we could not clear a whole audience at once and have them back because we would possibly eliminate ourselves. So we had to exit one row, enter one row, exit one row, all while the show was always moving.
Insane. Wait, was there just one judge?
Every single second of it was recorded, which is useful for making a documentary. Yeah. And a judge comes the last 8 hours and then they review everything. Okay. And then there are official witnesses that are logging every single second. And then they check the witness log against the record.
So serious.
It is. They are not messing around, them Guinness people. They mean it. So when you think it's like easy, no. In fact, people lose during their attempts all of the time.
Wow. That's crazy.
Wow. I would probably never interject this, but my dad was actually in the Guinness Book of World Records for many years. He invented a category and he submitted it and they accepted it. He had the most synonyms for a word. Drunk.
Drunk.
Yeah.
Did you say drunk or trunk?
Drunk.
Oh, drunk.
Drunk. A lot, yeah.
Drunk with
so
a D.
Go back to the Shakespearean, you know. So, and I think someone broke it and then he just came back. Like someone added one because you could. It's just a list. And then he crushed him. He added like another 100.
You know, speaking of sauced and tossed, I would like to hear Eden's story
yes,
now.
Yes, please.
My trauma?
Yeah, I would like to hear, please, make your trauma edible for us.
That's what my therapist says at the beginning of each session as well. I would like to hear your trauma. Make it
I love
edible.
It. I love it. Let us relate hard with your trauma.
Well, as we already discussed, I have an intense phobia of clowns. And it's not a bandwagon new phobia. I grew up in the countryside in Oregon, out on a few acres and kind of the middle of nowhere with like goats and horses and the whole thing. And I was a free range child. So my parents did not realize that I read Stephen King's It at the age of 11, which is way too young to read Stephen King's It. If you have 11-year-olds, don't let them read it. So Pennywise the Clown specifically is that is my when you picture clown phobia. And then I've watched the miniseries. I know there are movies now, which I will never watch in any way, but I watched the miniseries and I was so afraid that I wouldn't like go out and water the goats at night. So Pennywise the Clown has just been a long-term phobia in my life. And my husband, Ashad, and I went to go visit our friend Marklin in Bristol, England, like 20, now I can't even remember, 2018, 2019. And as soon as we land, it's a couple days before Halloween, Marklin, delightful chap, says, I have arranged for some friends. We're all going to go out and meet at a scare park. I don't even know what a scare park is. It sounds just like delightful and British. And I'm like, ooh, we're going to go, you know, judge baked goods and drink tea and something will be a fright. And we pick up a sweet little friend of his that works in the UN. She's so delightful. We're chatting in the car that I'm not paying attention. And then he's like, we're here. And I realize we are now in the middle of the countryside at nighttime with nothing around. And scare park is their word for like haunted house fear, terrible. Yes. And it is slapdash. It's like an apocalyptic like structure thrown together. This is not like a haunted house. In Salem, where I grew up outside, a haunted house is the abandoned strip club across from Costco that every year that turns into the haunted house. This is not that. This is we are out in the countryside. There are fields of tall grass and things around, and there is essentially a floodlight and torches and then tiny little structures. So I am already terrified, but I also am a Xennial, and I lean towards Gen X tendencies of always maintaining my cool cred at all times. And so I'm not telling people that I am shaking and deeply afraid already. And as we're walking in, there are these two giant stilt walkers that are dress like vampires, but not like jokey vampires. They're dressed like Bram Stoker and Dracula kind of vampire, where you're like, you know, it's a vampire, but there's no reason to know. But you just know they say like Dracula, you know what I mean? Like it's that kind of thing. And I see them start messing with people. Like they're actually grabbing at people as they're coming in and like pulling at them. And I'm like, no, no, no. I come from litigious America. We don't touch people. We can't touch people. In England, they can touch you is what I learned. And they do. So I basically run past. We meet all Marklin's lovely friends in the middle, and they're like, okay, this thing over here is like supposed to be up. It's the most terrifying ride. I'm using quotes because it's this most terrifying structure that's like prison based, which inappropriate, but that's what it is. There's like a baby kind of supposed to be less scary here, and then various just other like creatures walking around. Everything's just terrifying. I want to leave. I'm not driving. So I agreed to go through the baby scary thing. And I'm like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll keep my eyes closed. Because if I don't see anything to scare me, there's nothing that can be
done. Good plan.
So we go in forming a human chain, which I incorrectly called a human centipede and was very much told, please don't say that. And if you don't know what that is, don't Google it. Just don't. Your search history will be destroyed. And I like hold on to Ashad's waist and just shove my head in his back. And we go through and I just hear screams and it's like icy, like cold and then super hot. And right as we're getting to the end, I hear, she's got her eyes closed.
No.
And they realize and they're mad.
No.
So then some furry thing is in my ear snarling and in my ear where hot breath is dripping into my ear canal. I do not open my eyes. I get out and I'm like, I'm not going anywhere else. And they're like, no, we can't leave. We have to go do the terrifying one. I'm like, I'm not doing it. So they say, well, what are you going to do? And I look out and I see a bench in the darkness next to the field. And I'm like, I will go sit there. Because if I stay in the floodlit area, the creepy vampires who are pulling on people will surely see me. So my brain is like, go sit in the darkness. I go sit there, pull out my phone. No international service, no Wi-Fi. I realize I don't know where I am. No one knows where I am. I'm sitting in the dark, and then I see the vampire things start to walk the perimeter. And they are walking around the circle, and they are going to come find me.
Ooh.
And my heart is racing, and I'm like, my options are to run towards the floodlit, where they surely will see me, but hopefully they'll continue the perimeter, or I can retreat into the pitch black English countryside. And in my phobia state, I go, that's the smarter thing to do. So I leave the bench, I creep backwards. I am now hunched over, hiding in the grass where no one knows where I am. And I hear a noise. And I turn to my left, and I swear to God this is true. There is Pennywise the clown holding a flamethrower with an 8-foot flame coming out above him. This is not an imagination. There is a clown next to me dressed as my greatest fear. And even in my worst childhood nightmares, he never had a flamethrower. I didn't know they were real. I thought they were like a Schwarzenegger movie prop, but flamethrowers are real. And he has a flamethrower and is laughing maniacally. So now there is a flamethrowing clown like 15 feet to my side. And I have the vampire stilt walkers coming around the perimeters now all triangulating me in. And I am full fight or flight. And for 1 second, fight kicks in, and I literally think about like roundhouse kicking that clown in the face.
And deserved.
I really like thought I could, and then I choose flight. I bolt out of the tall grass I'm in. I go running past through like the enclosing vampires into the floodlit area. As I come out, I literally run into Ashad crying and Marklin. I'm like, we have to go, we have to go. And they're like, we can't go. When we were climbing out, the way you leave the prison ride, again, quotes, is they make you belly army crawl underneath barbed wire. And our sweet little friend from the UN, the monsters came out, grabbed her by the ankles, and dragged
what
her back
is
in.
This place?
So we don't know where she is. And everyone's out there. Her boyfriend is like freaking out. Everyone's now, we are standing in a circle back to back, like ready to murder. Like we are just like, okay, everyone be ready. What are we going to do? How are we getting out of here? Then our little friend comes out looking like 30 years of therapy are for sure in her destination. And I'm like, we gotta go. And everyone holds hands, runs out of the scare park. We get into the car, and as we are driving away, I will always remember, I see the flames still going from on top of the countryside. Like the flamethrower is still happening as he's just walking around scaring people.
Oh, Eden. Oh, I feel like...
Yes, that please clap for my trauma. Clap for my... People don't believe me. I have photo. I took video of the clown because I, for 1 second, thought it wasn't real. So I pulled out my phone, videoed it, put it back, and then hit play to see if it was still there, thinking, like, maybe this is... Wow,
this is a, yeah.
It's there.
Wow. You know, that moment when you... You first isolate yourself and kind of like, I'm going to make this choice. Just reminds me of like when you watch any horror movie and you're like, why are you walking into the
whole
woods
theater
by yourself?
I know.
And then you're like, because you're traumatized and you're not making good choices. And you're like, I'm trying to get to safety.
Yeah.
This is the perfect therapy story, by the way. And it was real because I filmed it. Wow. It's so intense.
I know.
Wow.
Nailing the unhinged. That is.
Yeah. Nailing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how does this, I'm curious now how this story does show up for you in your life. How did you all talk about it afterwards? And how does it come up in your life ever?
Well, I come from a family of WASPs, which means we immediately never spoke of it again. And everyone just started drinking and pretending it didn't happen. Right. And perhaps like in 20 years, we'll send an email about it. that's sort of how that worked. I don't know if people understood. I'm not sure if I was able to communicate fully what happened, but everyone had their own trauma. So we like all couldn't be, we were like, you don't understand what I went through. And they're like, you don't understand what I went through. I will say a few years later, I went to a goth drag show and where someone popped out of a coffin and it was Pennywise the Clown.
No, again?
Holding a bunch of balloons. And just as I was about to panic and run, 99 Luft Balloons came on and Pennywise started dancing his heart out and popping the balloons with great joy. And that was a slight relief. Yeah. That was like the silliness of it. So I was frozen in fear once again, fight, flight, or freeze, right?
Right.
It's a good thing I didn't go up and just start roundhouse kicking that poor Pennywise drag queen.
99 Luft Balloons. That can be that's your calming song moving forward.
I mean, it's a joyful song.
It is.
It is a joyful song, but I still don't like clowns and I don't enjoy being in scenarios. I think I drive myself more to places. I don't like having to ride
it's
with people.
It's good to have escape plan.
An exit plan. Yeah, exactly.
What about Halloween? Are you okay with Halloween?
Not really.
Yeah.
I don't care for it. I like a fun dress up party. We have a dear friend who, Frayne and I, who always throws a good karaoke bash. I'm like, that's fine. That's silly. I like dressing up. I come from theater world. I just don't like purposefully scaring things. I won't do horror movies. I don't understand why they exist.
Yeah,
right.
I'm with you.
It's so the scare tactic of this place is so purposeful. Like they were like, she's isolated now. She's closing her eyes. Let's continue to drive into her trauma of this experience, which is, and there's so many litigious things in this. There's them touching you. There's a flamethrower in a field.
It was so many. It's always damp though in England.
Oh, true.
So we weren't worried about the fire situation of it. But I feel like it did change my impression of the British slightly, which I always just think of as so polite. And in my experience, every time I've gone to England and we have many friends there, it's like everyone making you so comfortable, just like so comfortable, so gracious. And I'm like, I know what some of you are doing behind closed doors.
Maybe it's kind of the latch opening of them suppressing everything. It comes out in like these horrific ways.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frayne, are you averse to haunted houses or do you seek out the scare?
I seek out a particular kind of scare. I do like a haunted house. I do not like being touched either, though. I would probably punch somebody. I think that's what would happen to a lot of people in the United States of America. If you were to touch somebody in a thing, people would punch or kick you, I feel like.
Well, the thing I hadn't mentioned is being a high school theater kid is I tried to get over my fear of haunted houses by acting in a haunted house when I was in high school, which worked pretty well because you knew the inside, but also was still traumatic because I remember scaring little kids and feeling so bad.
Wait, what
so
were you dressed
bad.
As? What was your role as, in this haunted house?
So ironically, my best friend, who's now a real doctor, I would play like a madman doctor and she would play my nurse and I would murder her over and over. And we had like some blood that we would throw up from her stomach, like I was sawing her in half. And we had a great time doing that. But there was one dark hallway in the haunted house where people would grab ankles. And I was not about that.
No. Yeah.
I was not about that.
And no ankle biters.
And that it was always the high school boys who volunteered to do that. And they got kicked in the head all the time.
Oh, yeah. I bet they did. But how about you, Andrew? What is your horror experience?
I don't have a lot, but I do. Eden, I'm sure you are familiar with the Enchanted Forest.
I got engaged there. I have written many stories and interviewed the owner, Peter Toft, so many times. Or Roger Toft, sorry. He is an amazing man.
So this is kind of an amazing little tiny amusement park.
Family-owned.
Family-owned. South of Salem. And I do remember, we go there every year for my daughter's birthday. And I remember when the kids were really young, them wanting to do the haunted house. And like very quickly, it just became me with either kid under my arm running at top speed as they scream. And even now, they're like teenagers. They're like, you guys want to do the haunted house? Like, no.
Nope. And I know it so well. I know the exact thing where the fake guy comes out with an axe in that haunted house. Like, I have done it my whole life and I still hate it.
Yeah.
Even knowing it.
Yeah.
But
I don't remember. I just remember running at top speed, just feeling like I need to find the exit.
Oh,
yeah, every once in a while I will still get talked into doing something scary, and I hate it. Every time.
Have you ever walked into it by accident? Have you ever, again, gotten... I know you drive yourself. You've taken measures to have an exit plans for things. But have you accidentally, you know, since then ended up in, like, a scary situation where... you're confronted with this kind of thing?
It's called America.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that.
I have been accidentally shown up, and it's called being especially a woman in America. No, I think I'm pretty cautious, and now I'm a grown-ass person, so I'm... And a longtime journalist, so I ask a lot of questions.
Like, yes, I need to know more about this before
I go.
I
need to know more about this. So, what's the exit plan also?
What's the exit plan? I always have this esoteric idea for a haunted house, which is to have like things that are scary to us, kind of along the lines of what you're starting to get at, which is, Eden, which is like... there's a room where there's a couple and there's like a pancake breakfast in front of them and they're not talking to each other, but they're just both looking down and on their phones. And just like things that are like scary to us in the world.
I love that.
I actually feel like that sounds nice.
Yeah.
A little pancake.
You would go to that haunted house,
pancake
right?
breakfast and just be on your phone for a little bit. Do my daily crossword. Okay.
No, but they're clearly not talking to each other. So it's more about the horror of isolation.
Modern life,
isolation. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm loving this conversation so far. And you know what? It's time for Bree's Hot Minute.
Bree!
Hey!
Brought to you by Powell's Book Store Manager, Bree Hoag. Bree's been hiding in my giant water bottle listening intently to Eden's stories, and she's got some tasty book recommendations based on themes she pulled out.
Eden's story has me hiding in my coffee cup, so it's hard for me to pivot to a recommendation because I'm pretty sure I'm going to have a nightmare about clowns tonight. Growing up, I loved scary stories to tell in the dark. In her book, Her Body and Other Parties, Carmen Maria Machado has a short story called The Husband Stitch that is a modern take on The Girl with the Green Ribbon. Machado's book is fantastic. She won a Shirley Jackson Award, which celebrates literature of psychological suspense and horror. Everyone should read Shirley Jackson. If you're new to Jackson, you can start with any of them, but I love her last book, We Have Always Lived in the Castle, which is about two sisters, one agoraphobic and their uncle, as they deal with the aftermath of a tragedy that took the lives of the rest of their family. Thanks for listening to My Hot Minute. Watch out for clowns. And back to you, Fran and Andrew.
Thank you, Bree. Those were
Thank you.
Great.
Love it.
I love it.
Thanks, Bree.
Great. Hey, Eden.
Yeah.
Where can people learn more about what you're up to and tune into your podcast and do all the things?
That's a great question. Okay, so Slaying a Dragathon is available everywhere that you can find a podcast.
It's so good.
It's the 5-episode miniseries of all of the planning, backstage, interviewing queens, grabbing people like, you know, Fred Armisen and Peppermint and people, Paula Pell, and asking them questions while we were actually doing Dragathon. So that's everywhere. We are currently in the middle. We've just finished principal filming for the documentary Dragathon. So you can look at dragathondocumentary.com. You can look at edendon.com. Find me on socials, and either it is on its way out or will be out soon.
Great. And can you tell us all the cities of books of dates that you've done so far?
So far, we have Portland Book of Dates. We have, which is in second edition, Seattle Book of Dates. Nashville Book of Dates is out at the end of 2025. And more will be coming.
Amazing.
I love it. It's series.
And we have a fun question that we are asking people at the end of the show now, which is like something that is seemingly inconsequential, but makes you kind of feel unhinged. And this, the genesis of this is I was out to dinner with, I guess it's important to say my ex-boyfriend. Like, that's a moniker he probably doesn't really need. He's just a friend now. But and we were ordering Mexican food, and he ordered before me. And he said, axe the avocado on this order. And I piped up immediately with, oh, I would love his avocado. Please give me his avocado.
It's so expensive.
It's so expensive. That is a thought, actually. And I was like, knock $10 off of his meal. but I could feel already, because, you know, we were together for a long time. I could feel the ire raising next to me after I said that from him. And when I was done ordering and the waitress walked away, he was like, so irate. And he was like, I know it doesn't make any sense, but it makes me so mad when I say I don't want something of my order and somebody else says they want it. He was like, I need you to never do that again. And it was like, and it did. I did have the same look you both have on your faces, and perhaps a listener does too. And then we just started laughing about it and just talking about all the stupid things that raise our ire that are ridiculous, because you're sort of mad about it and laugh about it at the same time.
What makes me unhinged? I have a lot of restaurant, actually, specific ones. Oh. I get so irate, like hands balled up, when people are loudly on phones in restaurant, particularly if somebody dares to be on speakerphone, like on FaceTime without headphones, on speakerphone without headphones. It's just so rude. There's never a scenario that it is reasonable. You are not main character energy to be in public on FaceTime. People seem to think that it's like everyone wants to know my life that's going on. We don't. So use your headphones. And even if you're in a restaurant, just, you know, Ashad says, treat it like a burp. It happens to everyone. You have to take a phone call in public. Just step outside. Yeah. Say, excuse me, go outside, do your call, and come back and join
the
table.
Treat it like a burp.
Treat it like a burp.
I feel like that's a nice thing people can take away with them today.
Treat it like a burp.
Yeah. Treat it like a burp. Take your own car. Eden, Don, take your own car.
And treat a phone call in a restaurant like a burp. Say, excuse me, take it outside.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Thank you, Eden.
Thank you, Andrew.
Wonderful. Thank you, Frayne Masters. Thank you to our fabulous behind-the-scenes editor and producer, Julia Oppenheimer. Frayne Masters is your executive producer. Frayne Masters and myself, Andrew Dixon, our co-hosts and co-creators. Thank you to musician and frontman for Lost Lander, Matt Sheehy, for creating our theme music. And thank you to Powell's Books and Kiln Co-working Space for making this episode and our live shows possible. We recorded this show at X-Ray FM. Find them online, or 91.1 or 107.1. And you can find more information about our Backbench Storytelling shows and workshops